is Like Mind, Like Body, a podcast about the surprising ways our thoughts and feelings can impact our physical health. I'm your host, Laura Sago, and on each episode, I will speak with researchers, physicians, and ordinary people who have incredible stories to tell about the power of the mind-body connection. This podcast is a part of the Curable Universe, which brings you the best online recovery programs for chronic pain. Today on the show, I am speaking with Jessica Dixon. Jessica is a mindfulness meditation teacher and coach specializing in working with clients with chronic pain. She comes to this work having recovered from 20 years of migraines using many of the tools and techniques taught in the Curable program. When she's not coaching clients one-on-one, Jessica is also a facilitator for the Curable Groups program. For those of you who are not familiar with what Curable Groups is, it is our 12-week virtual healing boot camp. We only open registration for it once a quarter, and that opportunity is coming up on June 22nd. That is when we will be hosting our big quarterly event where you can learn a whole lot more about the groups program, reserve a spot if that feels right for you, and leave with our brand new free printable workbook called 3 Weeks to a New Perspective on Pain. Speaking of which, it seems like a great time to mention that this new printable workbook will be authored by three of our incredible Curable Groups facilitators, including today's guest, Jessica Dixon. In Jessica's section, she will be giving specific guidance and exercises designed to help you learn how self-criticism activates the danger system, how to invite self-compassion into your daily life, and how to tune into and follow your inner guide. It is such a great workbook, and once again, you can get that for free just by showing up for the Curable Groups event on June 22nd. You can learn more and RSVP for that at curablegroups.com. Besides her role as a facilitator for groups and a contributor to this amazing workbook, Jessica has another special connection to Curable that you will hear about today. Like so many of you who listen to this podcast and hear stories of recovery, I was once a chronic pain sufferer looking for my aha moment. And Jessica, as you will hear, played a key role in bringing that about. So maybe I'm biased, but I truly loved this episode and I cannot wait for you guys to hear it. So let's dive in. Jessica Dixon, one of my very favorite people in the mind-body medicine world. Thank you for joining us today. And how are you doing?
Oh my goodness. It's such a pleasure. Very happy to be here. Yeah, I'm hanging in there. I'm doing well.
Yeah, there is obviously a lot of emotion and deep, deep pain and reflection going on in all of us right now. So we have a lot of exciting topics to get into today, including your recovery story, your tips on self-compassion, all kinds of great topics that we've been planning to talk about. But before we get into any of those, I wanted to give you an opportunity to share anything that's on your heart.
I really appreciate the question. Yeah, I think before diving into my personal story, it doesn't feel right to not really pause and acknowledge, just as you said, the deep pain that we're in as a country right now, and certainly that you and I are probably feeling here in Chicago. I find myself really mourning over the needless murder of George Floyd, the hundreds of years of violence and persecution and institutionalized racism that have preceded this moment in time against the Black people in our country. And I think there's a lot that can be said around intergenerational trauma, and it stems from slavery in our country. And you know, I hope to really, in our conversation today, I hope we have some time to talk about compassion for ourselves, for others. And, you know, even as it relates to my own story, recovering from chronic pain, I fundamentally believe that this work that we're talking about doing with healing ourselves physically, emotionally, helps us to develop that internal capacity and resilience to hold and heal our communities. And so this healing work, individually and collectively, I just think has never been more important.
Agreed. And as you say, when we do the healing work that it takes to overcome chronic pain, it forces you to transform your habits and thought patterns and brain wiring. And there is a lot of overlap there with the healing work that is going to be required to truly transform this centuries-old pattern. One more thing that I'd like to point out before we move forward with the interview is that when we talk about healing chronic pain, racism is a critical component of that conversation. And this is true for many reasons, but one that I'd like to point out because it appears to be less well known is that it's well researched and documented that experiences of racial discrimination are actually a clinically significant variable that contributes to pain intensity. So, at a physiological level, being on the receiving end of racial discrimination changes what is happening in the body in a way that directly contributes to the development of chronic pain. So, healing chronic pain in the world is not possible without addressing the issue of racism. And we are committed to fundamentally changing the way that we create healing content to reflect that importance. With all of that said, I think that in a time where outrage and grief are rightfully the predominant emotions that many of us are feeling, stories of recovery and tips for self-compassion can provide a lot of hope and healing during this time. Your story of recovery and healing is always one that has been particularly inspirational to me, and I would love it if you could share that with us today.
Thank you, Laura. It's a privilege and an honor to be here to try to do just that. So migraines for me started around the age of 12, continued off and on for about 20 years. I really feel like I recovered from chronic migraines, which is not to say I don't ever have a headache or migraine at this point, but from the chronic experience of pain about 6 or 7 years ago. And on that journey, as I got older, they became more frequent, became more intense, to the point where I was having them kind of most days, you know, more than half of days I was experiencing a headache or a migraine. I will say I had a number of other symptoms and conditions that I now, looking back, attribute to the mind-body connection and my body's way of surviving, coping, carrying stress, things like chronic knee pain, allergies, weird rashes that would come and go. My favorite probably being a very unique rash that would only occur when I was kind of out of shape and restarting a running program, which actually
highly specific.
But not infrequent in the course of my life that was happening. And I would go out for a run and inevitably would end up in hives all over my stomach and legs that were so itchy that I had to stop running. So it was very convenient from kind of a standpoint of not wanting to proceed on my running program. But migraines were really center stage for me. So they were incredibly painful. And most of the time I would honestly just try to push through them. I mean, I can remember starting a new job and, you know, with all the stress and perfectionism and everything that you kind of bring in your first days of new work, I was in such intense pain. I would, you know, was excusing myself to go to the bathroom and throw up of like the nausea and just the intensity of the pain that was there, and then would turn around and go back to work. And so the pain wasn't always easy, and I certainly wasn't easy with myself when I was experiencing it. It was often, you know, not until it sort of brought me to my knees that I would slow down enough to kind of take the rest and things that I, you know, the self-care that I needed in those moments. So I tried a lot of things to fix my migraines. I'll kind of briefly read a quick list of all the medications I've tried for them. Some of these are supposed to stop migraines when they started. Some I was taking every day to prevent them. This is like a little list for all my migraine friends out there. I'm sure some of you can relate to this.
The greatest hits.
Exactly, exactly. At different points, I was on some combination of nortriptyline, Topamax, gabapentin, ketoprofen, Midrin, Relpax, Toradol, Maxalt, prednisone. Ibuprofen was honestly kind of my tried and true, but none of these really worked that well. Tried Botox, not the fun kind that prevents, you know, or treats your wrinkles, but like, you know, just like in my scalp and at the back of my neck. Didn't help me at all. And tried a bunch of alternative approaches too. And it was just continuing to struggle with it. It was tracking my triggers. You know, I think I was tracking 37 variables in an Excel spreadsheet at one point of like what might be causing it. There was a real obsessive, there was a lot of fear of the migraines for me and what it meant when I felt one coming on, a lot of criticism of myself of what I had done to cause it. It was just kind of a mess and not a lot of fun.
No.
And at my low point, I finally, thankfully, found myself in the office of Dr. John Strax, who incidentally is a medical director for Curable, and you may have heard on these podcasts. Found myself to him in early 2014. So he's a, for anyone who hasn't heard him speak, he's an integrative medicine physician. He was practicing at Northwestern Memorial at the time. He's here in Chicago in private practice now. And he really helped me understand how past stressors from my childhood, personality characteristics like being perfectionist and people pleasing, current stressful things happening in my life, how all those things could contribute to my pain. And delivered what to me was a very hopeful message of, you know, there is not something structurally wrong with you, which was such a different answer and approach from what I had gotten from the numerous other physicians and neurologists and practitioners that had tried to help treat my migraines in the past. And there was something about that and about this mind-body connection piece that just really felt right to me. And so as I kind of started to do this work of tracing back around some of these things like childhood stressors and personality characteristics and things that I now understand can really contribute to pain, I kind of came to understand, you know, looked back in a different way at my childhood. And I'll say I grew up in a house with a lot of privilege, a lot of resources, a lot of love. And I, you know, deeply love and respect my family today. But there were difficult things too. You know, I had family members who struggled with untreated depression, addiction, special needs. There were pretty poor boundaries in my household. And I think I was probably born a highly sensitive person, but there were aspects of my home environment that really honed that sensitivity. And I've always sort of been able to feel other people's feelings, essentially as if they're my own in my own body. People call that being an empath, someone with a really highly attuned sense of empathy. And today, I treasure that ability to be empathic with people. But when you're around people who are in pain or struggling, especially when you're a child, it can be really overwhelming. And I experienced that a lot growing up because I was feeling a lot of my family's feelings. I was working really hard to take care of them and not upset them, have them as happy and at peace as I could. And as a child, we mistakenly believe we can control those things for other people. And I think that a lot of my perfectionism grew out of that and sort of a mistaken belief that if I was perfect, if I got straight A's, if I didn't make a fuss or a mess, if I wasn't a problem for others, that they would be happy, you know, that they would be okay. And that I had the responsibility or ownership to kind of do that for them. Certainly the people pleasing, I think, grew out of that too. I sort of trained myself to take care of other people and put their needs before my own. And I learned a lot of that really through the groups and classes I was doing with Dr. Strax, through journaling, meditation, conversations with people who were on this same healing path, which is how I came to meet you.
Yeah.
Right?
It is. Is this where we should tell this story?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. I'm going to tell it from my perspective first. I actually have never heard you tell this from your perspective. So I want your follow-up on this. The first time that I met you, you told this story, this same exact story, with many of the same bullet points. And even over here today, I'm enthusiastically nodding my head along as you tell your story because it is so similar to mine. So I remember I had gone to Dr. Strax and he said kind of the same thing to me. I don't think that there's anything that's structurally wrong with you. Some of my patients find it very helpful to hear about other patients in similar situations who have made almost full recoveries. Why don't you come hear some of my patients speak at this patient panel I'm hosting? And so I went down to Northwestern Memorial Hospital at like 5 p.m. on a weekday and sat in a poorly lit conference room. And it was like me and maybe two other patients and then like a bunch of people who just wanted to study Dr. Strax's work who were just there from like an academic perspective.
Mm.
And so you were sharing your story and a lot of people in the room were nodding along like, oh, how interesting from a healthcare perspective, how this worked out, huh? And I am like trying to hold back tears the entire time because everything you said, it was just like looking in a mirror. I specifically remember you talking about the Excel spreadsheet that you made and how you had your brother do like a regression analysis on the barometric pressure to see if that's what was causing your migraines. And it was like, as I was hearing you tell your story and validate that you did make progress and you did get better, that was the first moment where I thought to myself, okay, I can probably get better too, because she has pretty much all the same symptoms as me. At the time, you had mentioned that you had sciatica, you had mentioned that you hadn't been able to run. Those were some of my things I wanted to get back as well. And you were running again and you didn't have constant migraines anymore. And I was just like, oh my gosh, this might be it. And I think I asked you a question or two and was like really trying to keep it together because nobody else in the room was crying. And then after that session, I like walked out onto the streets of Chicago and just unleashed all of these tears, like this weird, I must have looked ridiculous, but I just had all of this pent up hope that was flooding out of me after I heard you tell your story. And I was just thinking like, this could be a whole new life for me. I wonder what's going to happen. Like, can I get my hopes up this much? And from then on out, I was really committed to doing the work. And I think we all know the rest of the story. I ended up getting better, ended up, you know, starting Curable with my two co-founders. And we had Dr. Strax heavily involved in that from the beginning. And I think after I got better, I think I reached out to you as well and was like, I just want you to know how much your story meant to me. And then we started forming more of a personal connection and have kept in touch over the years as you've done other things and as we've built Curable. And it's been such a lovely little partnership. Is that how you remember it?
That's pretty close. So I think this might have been the first time that Dr. Strax invited me to tell my story in front of a patient panel. Theoretically, ended up being a somewhat academic panel.
Academic panel and then me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And since then I've told this story many times and it's become a lot easier to tell. But that first time was so vulnerable. I was so proud and happy to be there, to get to do that, and so terrified of sharing these like really deep, vulnerable pieces of my story. And I totally remember you as I'm telling this story. You're nodding. You're like with your everything in your body is like, yes, yes, me too, me too. I actually don't remember you. My memory is slightly different. Not of you like holding back your tears, but more so just like pouring tears on your face as I was talking. Forgive me for saying that. And connecting on, you know, I remember you.
I'm a deeply sensitive person. Sometimes it just happens.
Hey, you had to let it out, and I loved it. It meant so much to me. And I think I had just been able to finish an Olympic triathlon, which was like a big life goal for me. And I shared that as one of my successes of like making it that far along on my healing journey that I was able to do that. And you asked something about, you know, being a runner and connecting on that. And you were able to tell me in that moment how much it meant to you to hear my story, how similar it was to yours and how helpful that was for you. And that probably helped ingrain this desire in me to keep being vulnerable and keep doing this work. And it was the patient stories that I heard before me, you know, that really helped me so much along this path. So it's what makes it so incredibly meaningful to continue to get to do this work and continue to be drawn to working with you in different ways.
Yeah. And think about just how many more people are going to hear and listen to your story right now. Maybe there's someone like me not successfully holding back tears at the moment.
I hope so.
I hope so, too.
Let it out, people. Let it out.
Just let it go. Feel your feelings. Just, there's no shame in it.
Not at all.
So since that time, you have made some gigantic changes in your own life path and your own career, just the same as I have. We both kind of had this realization of, okay, this stuff is life-changing, and I'd like to lean in all of my energy and enthusiasm towards this direction. So tell me a little bit about how your career path has evolved.
Yeah, I've kind of blown up my life a little bit, but in a really beautiful way. I can say that now that it's working so well. So yeah, as I was working with Dr. Strax, you know, 6 or 7 years ago, uncovering a lot about my past, my personality, sort of wading through the muck of all of that. I was also in a very demanding job. I was a VP at a healthcare company that was rapidly growing from a really small startup to this now, you know, billion-dollar large enterprise with a national footprint. And it had a really great mission, and I loved my colleagues. I was really proud of a lot of the work that I was doing, but it was also incredibly stressful. And I was sort of like coming home at the end of the day to my then, you know, boyfriend or fiance at the time of just like, I had just had no emotional or mental energy left. I had no emotional or mental energy left. And it was, I think this work and some of kind of understanding that when I push down big emotions, when I criticize myself too much, all of that really contributed to my pain. And so during that time, I started a really dedicated meditation and self-compassion practice that helped me to pause, see more clearly what was happening inside of me, really see what was true for me, and then meet it with kindness, which is like the really important second part of that. And so I got excited to kind of deepen that work for myself. And I ended up doing a 2-year mindfulness meditation teacher training taught by Tara Brach and Jack Kornfield, two absolutely incredible meditation teachers in our world today. And I started that with just really the intention to deepen my own practice, bring some mindfulness tools into the workplace where I saw, you know, in healthcare, people are suffering from compassion fatigue and taking care of other people. I thought I can bring this here. And I did do some of that, which was really satisfying. But my passion for it just sort of took off, took on a life of its own. And I got married in the summer of 2018, had the immense privilege to take some time off and travel with my new husband, and landed back in Chicago at this sort of crossroads career-wise, where the obvious path was just to dive back into healthcare, and where I had marketable skills and kind of knew what I was doing. And while it was incredibly scary to me at the time, instead decided to start my own business, teaching mindfulness and meditation. Went through a whole flare-up, mind-body flare-up. I had like carpal tunnel-like symptoms where I was like, oh my gosh, I can't work on this business because I can't even type and use my hands, and talk to Dr. Strax, and he's like, yeah, this is not really like so much of a thing. Like, I think you're fine, as he's sort of want to tell me, like, yeah, I think you're fine.
His confidence is always incredibly reassuring. If I ever say something to him, he's like, why don't you give it a couple of days, and if it's still acting up, you let me know. I'm pretty sure you're fine.
Yes. I have gotten that particular speech from Dr. Strax so many times.
So calm, so unfazed.
The point my husband is now when something pops up, he's like, why don't you call Dr. Strax? And then I think you're going to feel better after. Well, yeah, so that's what happened. Continued with my business. So I now in the afternoons, I do sort of one-on-one coaching with clients from actually from all over the world, which is really cool. Over Zoom, even before the pandemic, it was over Zoom, so I had less of an adjustment there than some. And work with people, a lot with people with chronic pain who are kind of on this path that you and I have been on, and help them with discovering self-compassion and mindfulness and sort of working on their healing journey. And then in the mornings, I work at a wonderful company called Tradewaters. They're head of HR. It's a 30-person company here in Chicago focused on climate change issues. And that's really great work too. So yeah, rearranging my career was not something I would have done without the feedback from my body via pain. So it's kind of adjustments, these big adjustments that I've made in my life really came about as I learned to listen to myself and try to trust that inner guide that was telling me I need to make a change, even when I was scared. I actually remember I was sitting in I did a half day self-compassion retreat that a friend of mine was leading. And I was sitting in that retreat and I felt this immense sadness come up that I had no idea what it was about. And I was crying and I was sort of journaling over the lunch hour trying to figure it out, and just realized, oh, I need to make a change with my job. You know, I've sort of, this work that I had really loved, I had sort of fallen out of love with. It wasn't the right thing for me anymore. And that was really scary because it presented so many questions and seemed like a bad idea to leave this very financially stable job and, you know, that was doing good work, and what next. But it was one of those things that once I sort of saw it and knew it to be true, I was able to then kind of take action on it, even if there was a lot of uncertainty in it. And I know there's a lot of privilege in kind of having the resources and ability to make that kind of a career change or choice. And I recognize that's not where everybody's at. But I think the principle stands about sort of tuning in and listening to our bodies, listening to ourselves about the changes we are able to make in our lives. So I've never been so happy. Very grateful for kind of how my pain guided me to be where I am now.
I applaud your willingness to meet your discomfort as an invitation to get curious and examine and make uncomfortable changes. So I think that is going to end up doing a lot of good, not only in your own life and your own body, but in the lives of a lot of other people. Speaking of which, I would love if you could give some direct advice or pointers to those who are out there listening, who are in chronic pain, who are really new to the world of mindful self-compassion, what is your best advice for beginners?
Yes, thank you. So I want to share three things that I think have helped me more than anything in my healing journey. I mean, I could actually make a list of like 100 things, but for the brevity of this podcast, I've chosen three.
And we'll make a follow-up blog post with your 100 things.
Yeah, 97 more things. Mm-hmm. And that's working with meditation and self-compassion, that's setting boundaries, and that's really learning to trust my own inner guide. And so I think I can't underestimate the impact that developing a self-compassion practice and changing how I speak to myself, how I treat myself, learning to really love and accept myself more has had on my pain and my recovery journey.
Give me an example of that really quickly, just so people know what we're talking about here. Like, what did it look like before maybe a conversation with yourself where you were not being so compassionate? And what does that shift look like now?
Yeah. So as I think back to the work that I used to do, you know, I'm picturing myself in healthcare as a new manager, and I'm working, you know, there's a physician who's upset with me, and he's just upset, but you know, it's getting directed at me at that moment. My internal dialogue in that conversation was all about, you're failing, you're not enough, you're totally messing this up. What's wrong? You know, what's wrong with you? Get it together. You're not able, you're not getting it done. Like the things that I would never say to somebody else. And that's not to say that those thoughts don't still come up sometimes, you know, our thoughts just happen. I mean, in my work this week in HR, as we're sorting through some really raw and vulnerable feelings for people in the workplace about everything that's happening in the world and what's our company's response to it. You know, I was finding, as I sat down to meditate, I was hearing some of that old voice that's like, you're not doing enough. You're not fixing this for people. You're failing. But I'm able to see it and hear it so much more easily now because of the formal meditation practice that I've done, and then replace it with, you know, putting my hand on my heart and saying, hey, I'm really trying hard here. And I just have to keep showing up and doing my best. And I really care about these issues, and that's going to show through to people. So it's not like we never have critical thoughts again as we work with these practices, but we can see them faster and replace them with those loving, positive messages that we would give to a friend or somebody we care about who's struggling with something.
Just learning to identify what does an unhelpful critical thought look like. Because many of us believe, oh, if I'm being hard on myself, that's going to lead me to become better. It's going to push me to do my best if I just keep, you know, being my own biggest critic. And there's such this fine line between constructive criticism towards yourself, where you really take a look and say, okay, I tried my best and I made a mistake and I can learn from this going forward, versus I made a mistake. I always make mistakes. I knew I was going to make a mistake. Why did I even try? And then you just kind of like spiral downwards and it's not getting you towards the goal you want to. So just like learning to distinguish and identify. It's so easy when we see it written out on paper, but it's so hard in our own heads.
It's really hard in our own heads. And I think a formal meditation practice, and by that I mean you sit down for 10 minutes a day, most days, and you focus on your breath, or, you know, use an app, use a guided meditation. Those things help us to actually be able to see our thoughts a little bit more easily. In the absence of that kind of intentional practice, most people are living a lot of their lives in the future, you know, rehearsing for things and rehashing things from the past. So a formal meditation practice can help you to see those thoughts a little bit more clearly as they come up, and then have an intention to be more gentle with yourself.
Yeah. So meditation, self-compassion, and you mentioned boundaries. Can you expand a little bit on what that means for you?
Boundaries. So I think for me, that means two things, like, or maybe I would divide it in a couple ways. One is sort of that communicating out loud to other people in relationship. I'm not willing to do this, or I won't tolerate this. It's like in front of me, my hands that you can't see are sort of up, like, nope, that's enough. And that can be done kindly, but it, you know, it's, we can think of sort of setting boundaries with other people. And those, you know, that was important for me. I think even more important for me, though, is this sort of setting of an internal boundaries within my own mind of what I'm choosing to take on or not as my problem to fix. In the curable language, we sort of use the metaphor of the backpack of someone else is struggling. They're carrying their backpack. I've got my backpack. I spent a lot of my life just, oh, you poor thing. Let me take your backpack. And I was like splat on the ground with like 15 backpacks on me. And making that differentiating between what is really, you know, and that doesn't mean we can't show up with love and support for other people, but what is really mine to take ownership of to fix? And I'll give you a really simple example from my own life. So my mom and I were really close. This is years ago now, but we were both kind of new managers in healthcare around the same time. She was running a cardiac rehab department. I was running a neurology department. And we would talk on the phone about our teams and our staff and issues that were happening. And, you know, my mom would say things like, oh, you're so good at this. Like, I'm having this issue, you know, with my colleague or my boss, or there's a conflict between these people. What should I do? And her question, you know, she wasn't asking me to fix it for her, but I was taking complete ownership as if it was my problem to solve. And so I was like, I think you should do this, and then you need to do this. And then I was hanging up the phone and stewing on it on her behalf. And that's not really what she even needed, you know. She was looking for a sounding board and maybe some ideas. But as I learned to even set on something so simple like that, set an internal boundary where it became much more about, oh, you might think about this or this, but what do you think? I mean, you're really good at this. I mean, my mom is really good at this kind of stuff. And allowing her to kind of own and fix her own issue, it totally changed. A small thing like that changed how I felt about hopping on the phone with my mom, and took something really out of my backpack that I had put in there that wasn't mine, that didn't belong to me. And so you can think about in your own life right now, are there people, as you step back, whose problems you're trying to solve for them versus being a source of support and love for them? Is, you know, just sort of that question, is this really mine to fix?
So important. There is a small group of enthusiastic Curable Groups graduates who are right now listening and saying, yeah, the backpack, oh my gosh. And they're like understanding exactly what you're talking about, because the backpack analogy is one that we use extensively in our boundaries video workshop in the Curable Groups program. And the reason I should mention that you are so familiar with that is because you actually have for a while now been one of our facilitators for the Curable Groups program. What has that been like?
So I started as a Curable Groups facilitator about a year ago. And I'll just say, you know, first of all, I love the Curable app. I wish I could hand it to myself as a teenager and just say, like, put down all these school books, study this. This is going to help you so much more than trigonometry. Really, this kind of building out of all of these emotional skills. And so love the Curable app, and kind of given everything that I've been on in my pain journey, being able to get involved in a deeper way with facilitating Curable Groups was just such a privilege. And so the Curable Groups content is phenomenal. For anyone who doesn't know, you're put into a group of 10 or 12 people, and there's a facilitator. You meet every week for about 3 months. And along the way, you're doing these online workshops on all sorts of great topics, like ones we are covering here in this podcast. Boundaries and self-compassion and childhood stress, and we really come together as a group and sort of talk through these issues with other people that are navigating similar things, which I think that community aspect and support is so key. Pain can just be really lonely, and there can be a lot of shame wrapped up in it sometimes, but it doesn't have to be that way. So I really love working with curable groups. I just have gotten to watch so many people do the incredibly courageous work to recover through the group's process and support each other, and it's really inspiring to be a part of.
It's got to be such a surreal experience to go from being the person in the room sharing your recovery story, hoping it resonates with someone, and that someone is like just me, to now you're just consistently on the phone, or not on the phone, on video with these 10 people who are basically like having that same experience with each other every week for 3 months, and like forming these really cool bonds. That's so neat. It's really come full circle for us.
It really has. And to be able to sort of sit back, hold space, but watch other people support one another through this journey. Yeah, I don't know how else to say it other than it's an incredible privilege to be a part of that with people, to kind of be let into their inner work and see how they're able to heal.
So one of the things that we like to do with curable groups is every quarter we open registration and people can come to our event to learn more and register at the end of it if it feels good for them. But even if it doesn't feel good for them, we send everyone home with this brand new free printable workbook. And this quarter's workbook is featuring 3 contributors who are also curable groups facilitators, and we are privileged to have you as one of the contributors to this workbook. So can you tell me a little bit more about what people can expect from your section of this workbook?
Yes, I was really thrilled when you asked me to contribute. I decided to focus on this idea of changing our minds about ourselves, as I talked about in my healing journey. And also when I work with clients, with people in curable groups, I just see this incredibly powerful change take place for people when they start to treat themselves kindly. And they might not even realize that they weren't treating themselves kindly. So when they start to wake up to how they're treating themselves and change it, and I don't just mean kind of self-care things, you know, doing nice things on the outside, things we think about as self-care, but really how people talk to themselves inside their own minds, and how they move along this path to learn to love and accept themselves. And so that's kind of the theme of my section of the workbook. So it's kind of, in more detail, we'll focus on how our self-criticism actually contributes to our pain or leads to our pain, ways we can start to interrupt that, practical ways to bring in self-compassion just in your daily life. And then the third piece, which is actually the third thing I was thinking of saying is really important on my healing journey, was how to tune into your inner guide. For many of us, it really disrupts the relationship that we have with our body. The body becomes something to not trust. The body is a source of suffering. And one of the beautiful things that can kind of come through this healing journey that I see people do in curable groups, that they do when they sort of work with these different things, is to start to trust their body, to start to listen to the messages that it sends, so you can choose really where you want to put your energy in your life. That same kind of, as I talked about on that self-compassion retreat, where I was like, oh, I need a shift. I need to shift. That would have been something that a few years before I would have overridden that. And so I'll have some content around that, how we kind of listen to and tune into and follow our inner guides.
Yeah. So this workbook is going to be a great next step for anyone who is wanting to learn more about these ideas, wanting to do some exercises to kind of test the waters with them. And again, our event is going to be on June 22nd. People can RSVP to attend at curablegroups.com, and anyone who attends the event is going to get this workbook completely free. So that is exciting. In addition to that, there are more ways and more intensive ways that people can take these ideas you're sharing with us today to the next level. So if someone is really connecting with you right now and is convinced that they need to work with you, how can they get in touch with you and learn more about your mindfulness and coaching business?
Yeah, thank you. So I do have some room, a little bit of room for new clients right now. And if you have any interest in potentially working together or just hopping on a call to see if it's a good fit and to learn more, you can read more about me at jessicadixonmindfulness.com. And that's D-I-X-O-N. Or you can email me at jessicadixonmindfulness@gmail.com.
I feel like those client spaces aren't going to last very long. We're going to have to hire you an assistant pretty soon. You're going to have to open up your own practice, because I just can't imagine how someone can listen to. You're just so calming to me. You have that effect on me, and I feel like a lot of other people are going to feel the same. So anyone who is lucky enough to get one of your client spaces is going to have an incredible experience.
Oh, thank you so much, Laura. That means so much to me. And I feel the same way about you. Love fest.
Yes, such a love fest. Well, Jessica, thank you so much for joining us on our show today. This has been such an impactful conversation, and one that I hope people can take away some actionable to-dos from right now and start speaking to themselves more kindly, meeting themselves with kindness, taking some time to meditate and slow down and really get in touch with what their body is inviting them to recognize. Thanks for listening to Like Mind, Like Body. If you are interested in learning more about Jessica's work or working with her one-on-one, then be sure to check out jessicadixonmindfulness.com or email her at jessicadixonmindfulness@gmail.com. And if you want to secure your copy of the workbook she's contributing to for free, don't forget to register for the June 22nd event at curablegroups.com. That's all. See you next time.